morning, everyone. Good to see you. Here we are again. It's good to be back. This week's Parsha, as again, I'm trying to avoid giving a Dvar Torah. That's not really what this is, our sessions are about. But it's always good that we're keeping up with the cycle of the year, and it's what unites us pretty much as a people around the world, that people all over the world, for the most part, are reading the same things that we're reading this week. This week's parsha is called Shlach Lecha, send to you, and we'll talk a little bit about that. The basic plot, it is again, this is another example of the piling on of complaint and rebellion upon Moses and Aaron. Moses is told to send 12 spies, a prince of each of the tribes, to go and scout out the land. At this point, they're about to go up into the land. That's very important. Just get our chronology. They're about ready to go. They send the scouts ahead. The scouts are given a number of questions to reply to. They all see the same things on the ground, but they come back with a different interpretation. 10 of them saying that it's really futile to go up to the land. There's no way they can take it. And 2 of the 12. Saying no, that's not the case. We can. Those 10 are taken out of the scene, if you will, neutralized. But it begins the process of the so-called 40 years in the dead desert, which was not basically the way it was supposed to be. That this generation of people could not really have the kind of wherewithal needed to take the land, It's a very sad moment, obviously, because the people now of this generation that left Egypt know that they're not going to make it to the Promised Land. And there's all kinds of stories we could tell about that. But the end of the parsha ends with something that's totally, it would look like totally not connected, but it's about the tying of tzitzit, of the tassels at the end of the corners of your garments. And we can talk about that. So, but let's just talk about the beginning idea of how our mystical tradition and our understood this idea of Shalach Lecha, of going into the land. Well, for many, they saw these as metaphorical things in a way, that basically going into the land is a place where now the divine sparks need to be elevated. That's sort of a Lurianic idea, that there's the land has to be refreshed from its original, if you will, divine, if you will, purpose. The spies are seen as emissaries representing the 12 tribes, and they were tasked of revealing the inherent holiness within the land. And then also there's the fact that since the spies came back with a negative report, which caused the decimation, if you will, of this generation, we as individuals still have the opportunity of rectifying the spies' failure to perceive and trust in the land's spiritual potential. And we should become holy spies. I love this term. We should become holy spies in our own lives. And this can be done by seeking and revealing the divine presence within our own surroundings. So this is based upon the Lurianic myth in Jewish mysticism, that there was this cataclysm, a big bang, if you want to call it that, which spread the sparks of holiness into all material things. And thus our purpose in bringing the redemption would be to release all of the sparks found in material things, and thus gather them back to their source and bring about a quote unquote a messianic age. But of course, we also have the issue of people having limited perception, it seems. I mean, the questions were asked, to give you example, one of the questions that Moses asked, is the land filled with fortified cities, or are they people living on the plain, P-L-A-I-N? And the 10 come back saying, oh, their cities are very fortified, they must be very strong. Whereas the other 2 say, no, they're probably not very strong because they have to live in fortified cities. And that they would be much stronger if they lived out on the plain. So it's really not that information could be the same information. The question, of course, is perspective and consciousness and how you see it. So some of our mystical teachers would say that the spies failure resulted from limited perception, and they focused on external threats and challenges instead of the underlying spiritual reality in God's promise. Now, this gets a little bit more confusing, but I did a little more research into it. There are three stages of consciousness, according to our mystical tradition. It's found in other traditions as well, other descriptions. And they are, mystical teachings are described three stages of consciousness related to redemption. One is point consciousness, then there's line consciousness, and there's area consciousness. The spies' fear prevented them from reaching the area consciousness. I'll get to that in a minute. And this one, the area consciousness, involves faith and trust in God's providence and the potential for expansion. But both mystical and Hasidic teachings highlight the power of positive attitudes and thoughts to shape reality. The spy's negative mindset created a negative reality, and this highlights the importance of choosing an optimistic perspective rooted in faith. Well, this is a tough thing to do, but many of us are seeking that right now. So you have to cultivate your inner world. The spy's fears came from an unwillingness to transition from a spiritual utopia to engaging with the material world. So true holiness involves finding and elevating, as we said earlier, the divine sparks within the everyday, and it means transforming the ordinary into a vessel for the divine. The idea of tzitzit coming at the end also is rather confusing. Why bring in tzitzit now? And the basic, it seems that what that paragraph, it's the third paragraph of the Shema that we recite every day, a number of times a day, it talks about glimpsing the fringes to serve as a tangible reminder of the moments of spiritual clarity, the taste for enlightenment, and they empower people to integrate those glimpses of the infinite into their daily lives. So, in summary, the mystical interpretations transformed the story of the spies into a lesson about the power of perception, the importance of spiritual connection to the material world, and the constant opportunity to elevate reality by seeking and revealing the divine sparks hidden within it. I won't go into the whole tzitzit thing because it's based upon a reality of the ancient world where once hem, H-E-M, once hem, was a sign of royalty, a sign of authority, etc. So by kissing one's hem, if you remember, you may have seen it in films, they kiss the hem of the emperor, they're showing respect, and we are basically have no emperor wearing the tzitzit, but all of us are wearing the tzitzit, and we often kiss the tzitzit to remind us of our own status, etc. Now, what's more interesting is this idea of lech lech, shlach lecha, send to yourself, go to yourself. Very strange word. It could have said shlach, easily send, not shlach lecha. And it brings us back to what? It brings us back to the lech lecha, right, which was the parsha in which Abraham and Sarah, Avram and Sarai are brought into the land that God will show them. Lech lecha, go to yourself. Also a lot of commentaries about it here. But here, basically, when you see go to yourself, one of the things that comes up is this idea of introspection, right? This is the going to yourself, examining your thoughts and emotions, values, beliefs, behaviors. And this self-reflection helps you gain a self-awareness and a deeper understanding of who you are and what is truly important to you. And these practices of mindfulness and meditation that we are engaged in help quiet the mind and create the space for this introspection. And by focusing on the present moment, where we are right now, you begin to be able to observe your thoughts and feelings without judgment, leading to greater clarity and peace. And meditation can also help you connect with your spiritual side. Then there are other people who see journaling. You might, it's a whole different discipline. It's a hard one, by the way, writing down your thoughts and feelings. It's a powerful way to engage in self-reflection. I find it's just very, very hard practice for me, but many of you may be doing it and gaining insights into your own inner world. And journaling can help you clarify that. And there are so many different ways that we have access to this kind of self reflection or introspection. many people find it outside in nature, and you know, they begin to have this idea, feeling that they can actually go into themselves and use this place of beauty and nature to be a place for introspection. But whatever it is, we know that accepting the present moment, which is the challenge, of course, is letting go of the past and the future anxieties and fully embracing the present is crucial for connecting with your inner self. So there are all kinds of ways of achieving what we would call self-awareness, a connection to your authentic self, a deeper sense of purpose. And it's a continuous process of self-exploration and growth that can lead to increased inner peace, meaning, well-being. And that's what happened to the spies. The spies did not have that sense of introspection. They were looking things totally surface level without understanding it in a deeper way. So that's what we have to do when we get the facts on, you know, when we see facts. Yes, this is true, but what underlies this that can have meaning to me? I was looking at Shefa Gold's a commentary on Shlach Lecha, and she basically says that what we get from the story of, I'm paraphrasing, the blessing that we receive when we went out on this mission, there is a mission, right? To spy out the land, taste the milk and honey that flows from the land, and let that taste guide us on our journey. Now, this blessing we receive is a glimpse. I love that word, glimpse, he says. And what do we do with that glimpse becomes the challenge. And she goes on and says, over a lifetime, we are given glimpses, flashes, and hints that open our awareness to the reality of paradise and unity that underlies this world of constant flux. She goes on and says, we are graced with a timeless moment in which the infinite is revealed as a source of our finite world. We are sent to that land that expand of expanded consciousness through our imagination, our practice, and grace. And we return from this taste of enlightenment, either empowered to receive and integrate the supreme blessing in our lives, or completely terrorized by the incomprehensible immensity of what we feel is beyond our grasp. So she refers to a verse in the description of the spies, those who have come back with a negative assessment, that the land eats up its inhabitants. And Rabbi Gold says they are correct. The small, ego-driven, separate self cannot survive in the pure air of that land. The I, quote unquote, the I will be dissolved, called beyond itself, merging with the beauty and mystery of that place. So this is one of the things that she goes on and says is probably the purpose of the tzitzit, was to give us a sort of another little opportunity to glimpse at what is there that we can take and make it into a life, if you will, of real perception beyond, if you will, you know, beyond what we normally see, etc. There's a lot more to talk about. I don't know if we have as much time, but I just want to talk about those different levels of consciousness that I mentioned earlier. So, for instance, there is this point consciousness, and you'll see this talked about in various things. Not a scientific thing, no experiments done on this, but point consciousness is focus and narrowness, right? To being very focused on a single point or objects with a very limited scope of awareness, right? Just the object itself, it doesn't take us anywhere except the object. Then there's intuition and non-duality. Some spiritual teachings associated point consciousness with our, how should I say, our intuitive thinking and being detached from the physical senses, recognizing the non-dual nature of existence. And then, of course, the point consciousness is limited, but it's still intense, of awareness. Then we have line consciousness, streams of thoughts and feelings, right? The flow of stream of consciousness. You may know that term, right? We use that in the thinking about various books. there's a stream, there's a line consciousness, there's an awareness of where things follow chronologically or sequentially. And then there's also a narrative and an inner monologue. It often involves internal dialogue and a sense of self-reflection. And the third is area consciousness. This is something Rabbi Gold said was not available to these spies. Expansive awareness, a state of broader awareness, encompassing a wider scope of experience and perception. Area consciousness basically is, we feel we relate to the interconnectedness of things and recognize that everything is part of a larger whole. And there's also this objective understanding. In spiritual terms, area consciousness signifies an objective understanding of the world, seeing beyond narrow individual perspectives and embracing different viewpoints. So the story of the spies has become sort of a very important metaphor for our own self-perception, our own seeking of going within ourselves. You may recall that one of the things the spy says, which is quite interesting, is that their own self-worth and self-perception is so fragile that they say, we appear as grasshoppers in their eyes, the eyes of the so-called giants that are in the land. We appear as if. So in a sense, it is their own sense of their own smallness. By assigning this definition or this description of smallness to themselves, I mean to others, rather than it coming from themselves, is a very important thing. When we appear or feel to appear as grasshoppers vis-a-vis the giant, we are basically saying we have lost our confidence in self. And ultimately, self-confidence, and I experience this quite a bit in various aspects of my own life. When you lose your self-confidence, you really become a bit lost, and you lose the perspectives, you lose these kinds of possibilities of different consciousness. And so after all is said and done, I'd like to just summarize by saying, Shalach Lecha, send into yourself. So this is something that has nothing to do with geography or history. Send into yourself. Now, sending what into yourself is something you're going to have to work with. We all have to work with. But once we get into ourselves, we have to be able to get out as well and not be totally solipsistic and see everything only within ourselves. So that's the balance of self-reflection and the balance of still connecting to a larger consciousness beyond us. But you need both, and it's sort of, the way most things in life are. It isn't either or. We need both the capacity to be self-reflective and the capacity to see how our lives and everything around us fits into a larger pattern. So I'll stop with that. There's a lot. I talked a great deal. But one of the things that I enjoy about teaching here is that it gets me to go down a lot of different wonderful sources and find things that really help me in my own knowledge base and my own, if you will, my own feelings, and that's really important. So let's open up for a little bit of conversation, and we have some time, so if anybody'd like to say anything, please do. If you don't like to say